Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October 4th, 2013, and the International March for Elephants is happening today all over the world. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for coming today. Jenny hopefully will be coming. I hope Tim will show up. And Alyssa and Cynthia are definitely away today. Welcome, Jackie, and everyone else who's listening. Today's show is dedicated to the elephants. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. On today's special show for the elephants, we have two interviews for you all about the elephants. Our first interview is with Liam Cronin. He is a representative from the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals nonprofit organization. And today he will be talking to us about the treatment and abuse of the elephants who are kept in captivity for decades of their lives in order to perform for circuses such as the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey. We'll be learning about the conditions these giant and sentient creatures must endure for the duration of their enslavement. And for our feature interview, we have Rob Branford on the show, who is the head of the UK chapter of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. This charity runs a sanctuary in Kenya for rescued elephants and is today the most successful orphan elephant rescue and rehabilitation program in the world and one of the pioneering conservation organizations for wildlife and habitat protection in East Africa. They will also be opening a Canadian chapter in Toronto next year, so look out for that. Rob will speak to us about the Orphans Project that they run at the sanctuary, which entails rescuing orphan baby elephants whose parents have been killed for ivory, and then raising them to be able to integrate them back into the wild. Rob is also an organizer for the International March for the Elephants, which is happening today at 15 locations all over the world, and he will tell us about this event and how you can get involved, even from the comfort of your home. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned for that. So this past week, we celebrated the World Day for Farmed Animals, and Jackie, you did something special for this day. Please tell us about it.
Yeah, well, actually, on last Saturday, so not the actual World Farmed Animals Day, there was a demonstration, more like a vigil taking place at the Lilydale Slaughterhouse and Processing Plant in Port Coquitlam. So about nine of us total showed up, kind of scattered attendants throughout the duration of the time. And when I first left my house, it was kind of just starting to sprinkle, so it wasn't too bad. So I wasn't really prepared for what lie ahead, which was a massive thunder shower.
And that was Saturday, right?
That was Saturday.
1:30 p.m., the massive thunder shower.
It poured on us.
Everyone's speaking of now.
Exactly. But the good thing about that is I think people kind of...
As they were driving by, as the rain got
heavier and heavier, the honks got louder and louder. So, you know, that just tells you that at least the people had empathy for us in the rain. And hopefully it did open their minds and make them think a little bit about what was taking place behind the Lilydale sign at that place.
I presume you were holding signs up that sort
of
alerted drivers. So what did the signs say? What kind of information was being conveyed to them?
Well, there were signs that were standard for the day, and they were, I think it was being arranged by, I don't actually know the group. Do you know the World Farmed Animal Day group?
Well, that's Farm. We've had them on
Farm.
The show.
Sorry, that's
yeah.
the group. They sent out some signs, and they were just saying the horror and the abuse that lays behind these walls and things like that. So we had those signs, and then some of us also made our own signs. I made one that said, we stand here in solidarity with the tortured beings. And then there was a couple other signs saying similar things to that along the same theme. This was organized as well by Animal Freedom, which is a group located east of the Portman Bridge, and they do mostly events.
So here locally in Lower
Exactly.
Mainland.
Exactly. So they do stuff that for people that are outside Vancouver can get involved with, but still like within the Lower Mainland area. So it's great if you're wanting to be more involved in animal activism, but you're not quite directly in the middle of the city. It's a great group to get involved with, so I definitely recommend looking mm-hmm. into them.
I understand that this was their debut action,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Yeah,
so
that's my understanding.
Great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that they took the initiative, and as anyone can, right?
Exactly.
If you care about the animals.
And they also, some of the organizers for this, I believe, are also involved in a group called the Langley Herbivores.
Okay, we've had them on the show
yeah,
before.
Yeah, so if you've heard of them, you probably would know about this group, and you probably should get involved with them. So yeah, and I hope they're also, I believe, doing an event for Thanksgiving in commemoration of turkeys. Let me just see. Yeah, so they're doing a demonstration for turkeys on Sunday, October 6th. That's this Sunday. Yeah, from 1 to 3. So just contact Animal Freedom, Patricia Talman, for more information on that. And they're a great group, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else they have ahead of us.
Thanks so much for
You're
that,
welcome.
Jackie.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
Hello, welcome back to the Animal Voices radio show. My name is Jenny Rempel, and I'm here in the studio now. I just wanted to share with you guys a quick 2-minute animal activist tip. So this is an armchair activist tip, something you can do in your everyday life to help animals. So this week's tip comes to us from one of our listeners, Danielle. And for Danielle's birthday, she asked her friends to donate to some of her favorite charities that help animals. So a great way in your everyday life that you can help animals is at birthdays and Christmas time and other occasions when people might be inclined to give you things. You can suggest a donation to a charity that helps animals. A great list of these is available through Humane Seal. It's an initiative of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and they list charities that do not test on animals. So that's a great source, but you can also look into other organizations that we've featured on the show or other groups that are dedicated to promoting a compassionate world and compassionate living for people.
I think that's a great idea. I've actually done that before. Have either of you actually done that before for your birthdays?
Yeah, I've had family members donate to the sanctuaries, the local sanctuary saints and Hearts on Noses and
yeah.
Some other various places. Yeah.
One year I asked for people to donate to the people behind the Rico Berry Project for dolphins and Save Japan Dolphins. And I got a couple donations that way. So,
oh.
And then also in the past, the Walk for Farm Animals is coming up tomorrow.
Saturday, yeah.
It's a different time every year, and my birthday's in November. And one year I asked people to, hey, and my birthday's coming up, so if you don't care about the animals, but you care about me, please donate in honor of me.
Oh.
But, you know, just kind of in a friendly way. So those are some interesting tactics to use. And I hope Danielle raised some money for that. So Danielle, who's been in our show before. So that's great. Great to hear.
Awesome.
So
if you have an animal activist armchair tip for us that people can share in their everyday lives, email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com and we'll share it on the show.
Awesome. So, like we've mentioned a few of the things coming up this week already, but I just wanted to share a few more. I'm sure all of our listeners have heard, hopefully, of the Thanksgiving potluck that is coming up on October 14th.
Who's hosting that, Jackie? Who would that be?
Animal Voices?
What?
Yeah, so we are hosting that, and that is taking place at the Oak Ridge SDA Hall, and entry is by donation, but there's a suggested $3 donation.
This is a fundraiser for us. I just want people to know that. So any little bit helps. If you bring your toonies and loonies, we'd really appreciate that. It helps keep the show on the air.
But no one will be turned away because of lack of funds.
Exactly,
so feel free
to
invite anyone.
We're a very accepting group. And also, we just found out that Tofurky is going to be sponsoring us again this year, which is very exciting. So lots of Tofurkies for all. And Jenny, did you know anything about entertainment that's going to be taking place?
Yeah, we're going to have some great musicians. Ryza has confirmed that she'll be performing. She's a great Vancouver artist, and we'll be hearing some acoustic stuff from myself as well, and maybe some other guest artists that are to be announced. So check our Facebook page for some surprises on that, Animal Voices on Facebook.
Great. And just a reminder too, for the potluck, we do ask that everything is vegan, so please no dairy products, no animal products of any kind, no honey. Just to be cognizant of that when you're making a meal. But we do welcome non-vegans as well, so bring all your friends.
I actually think this is a great event to invite, especially if you know any students or international people that are don't have families or groups to celebrate with here. I think it's a great event to invite those people too, so they can celebrate the holiday.
Absolutely. And also today, as Allison mentioned earlier, there's the Walk for Elephants today. Last year, up to 36,000 elephants were killed for their ivory. So that's one life lost every 15 minutes. At the current rate of poaching, African elephants could face extinction in the wild by 2025. So that's pretty shocking. So peaceful marches are taking place in 15 cities around the world on Friday. So that's today, Friday the 4th of October. And you can also show your support by joining the digital march for elephants at iWorry.org. And tomorrow, another walk, the Walk for Farm Animals. So that is taking place tomorrow in Vancouver, starting at the Vancouver Art Gallery. Check-in is at 10 a.m. and there's a yoga stretch at 10:30. And the walk begins at 11 and ends at 2. There will be musical performances by Sinead Sanders and the Carnival Band. And it's a 2.3-mile route. And
that
walk
sounds far, but it's not.
No, it's like it's 5 kilometers like it's, or something.
Well, yeah. You do it, and you're having so much fun that you just don't want it to end.
It's yeah.
Just, and it's all flat for it's people great who are wondering.
Great networking for like anyone that wants to get to know other groups and other activists in the area.
Well, I think most importantly, yeah. We're doing it in downtown Vancouver, so it's a massively huge outreach event to the mm-hmm. public, just like the Pride Parade that we marched in, where you just have regular passersby, like on Granville Street and Robson Street. Those are the two main arteries of downtown Vancouver, and they're all seeing our signs. We've got like a lane of traffic blocked off by the police. Sometimes
yeah.
You know we have police escorts, and there's just lots of support, lots of horn honking.
So are all the is the whole route basically blocked off to traffic?
No, because
okay.
We're on Granville
yeah.
Street and Robson, but sometimes okay. When we need to get around in that, the police are there, so they will help.
Oh,
they help guide the way.
So this is my first year, that's why I don't know much about how it works, but I'm really excited to
great,
be doing it.
Great event.
Yes, and dogs are welcome, so bring your dogs
of
along
course.
If you can.
And there's usually some people dressed up too, so if you have an animal-friendly costume and you want
ooh.
To support the animals, that's welcome too.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm sure there'll be the Mardi Gras, the foie gras duck and the cow. What's the cow's name? Liberation BC's cow.
I don't
cow.
Know the cow.
Lucky the cow, I think,
Lucky.
Is, yeah.
And then yeah, so.
I dressed up as the cow once. I got to be the cow and then walked into a pole shortly
oopsie.
Afterwards.
It's really
so
hard to see with that
up.
Costume.
Yeah. Yeah. Safety first.
And
have a friend.
We'll be there holding up our Animal Voices banner, so if you
yeah.
want to look out for us.
Come say hi.
Yeah, come say hi, for sure. And we'll be there at least before the event starts as well. So it's sort of like get there at 10 o'clock and then the march is at 11 and there's always like free food, and they usually have like a raffle and, like, as you said, the yoga stretch. It's going to be a lot of fun. Only partial showers tomorrow, so not when we're marching, right?
Okay, great. And on Wednesday, October 9th, there's an Invermere Deer Call Rally. So for the first time in history of our province, municipalities are working to mass slaughter the deer who have become victims of habitat loss due to rampant development in our communities. In the winter of 2011-2012, Kimberley and Invermere conducted a clover trap bolt gun call. So they killed 25 deer that winter in Cranbrook. Kimberley killed 99 and Invermere was set to kill 100. So this is a rally taking place before the BC Supreme Court judge, because the lawsuit will be taking place there against this call. There will be the rally on the courthouse steps at 800 Smythe Street in Vancouver between noon and 2 p.m. So please join them. They need your support.
Yeah, if people want more information about this deer call in Invermere, we actually did an interview about a year and a half with, I think it was with Rebecca Bretter. She's a local animal lawyer, and she gave us a good talk about what this whole issue is about. So you can look that up on our website, animalvoices.org.
And also, we're not the only province to have things like that. I mean, there's some other provinces that do culls as well. So you can check into your local area and see if your area supports any animal exploitation like this.
Yes, great.
Thank you for the event.
Thanks so much.
For our feature interview today, or for our first interview today, we have Liam Cronin with us. He works for the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. On today's Show for the Elephants, he will be speaking to us about the atrocities that commonly occur in the circus entertainment industry when it comes to the elephants, and specifically about PETA's Ringling Beats Animals campaign, a campaign geared towards stopping the cruelties inflicted upon these special creatures in the Ringling Circus. Hello, Liam, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about the plight of the elephants in the circus industry. Elephants are just such amazing animals, and they're known to be exceptionally sensitive and intelligent, as we humans can relate to them. And I want our listeners to know more about what happens exactly in the circus when it comes to the elephants. I've read Jason Hirbal's book, Fear of the Animal Planet, The Hidden History of Animal Resistance, and learned so much about these issues from that book, and I do highly recommend it to our listeners for more detailed information. But to start, I'd like for you to depict for us the journey that an elephant brought into the circus life takes from the moment he or she is either captured or born into this captivity. How does this all begin? What role does the elephant play in the circus industry during his or her lifespan? And at what age does this journey end?
Well, I think before you can really talk about the elephants in the circus, you have to first understand something called a bull hook, because the bull hook is, as many of your listeners I'm sure they know, is Ringling's weapon of choice that they use to, quote, you know, keep these animals in check. And this bull hook is a metal rod with a sharp metal hook on the end. It kind of looks like a fireplace poker. And they use this weapon to jab and hit the elephants everywhere they're the most sensitive. That's around their eyes, behind their knees, in their mouth. And if these elephants bleed, the trainers, they'll just cover up the wounds with this spray-on makeup, and it's on with the show. So this is the kind of culture we're talking about, and this is the weapon of choice. Now, when these elephants begin their lives with the circus, it used to be that Ringling would steal these elephants from the wild, but now they can't in most places in the world because that's illegal. So now they breed them at this breeding and training compound that they have in Florida. So these babies are taken away from their mothers at around 21 months old. And for those who might not know, the elephants in the wild, they stick together. They're tight social groups almost for their entire lives. And at Ringling Brothers, the elephants live to about 39, whereas in the wild, they can live to up to 70. So we're cutting decades off of their life. And it's pretty clear why, because literally from the moment that they're taken from their mothers, these elephants are taught that if they don't do what they're told, that they're going to face physical punishment. And this starts in training. And at these training sessions, the babies, they're screaming and they're struggling, they're shocked, they're whipped, they're beaten with these bull hooks. They have ropes tied to their legs, they're yanked to the ground, they're stretched out. And this happens nearly every day for up to a year in order to break their spirits for the rest of their lives. For the babies born at this facility, their childhood ends with the swing of a bull hook. And these elephants are trained in this way, and their role in the circus is basically to do inane tricks like sitting or standing or lifting your trunk, similar things that people teach their dogs to do, walking in circles, other pointless actions. And in addition to it being cruel, it doesn't lend anything to the show. And at a recent show in Albany, New York, a newspaper reported that the Elephant Act and Ringling Brothers was, this is a quote, placid as a pond and about as interesting to watch. So it's important to emphasize that these tricks are not enthralling to people, and the only reason that these elephants do them is because they're a constant threat of physical punishment.
So can you tell us about some of the conditions, just the regular conditions that the elephants must endure during their long span of enslavement in the circuses? For example, something that I had read about this week and hadn't really thought about before, transport. They can be kept up to 100 hours in transport in boxcars. And when you're looking at pictures of these like huge majestic creatures totally out of their element in the circus and thinking of them traveling in these boxcars, it just seems so unnatural. Can you maybe start with that?
Oh, right. No, that's important to know. I mean, even when these animals aren't being beaten, they're still in severe distress. And it starts, as you said, with the way that they're carted across the continent. And Ringling Brothers, they travel by train, and the elephants are kept in these small dark, poorly ventilated boxcars through all different kinds of weather extremes, sweltering hot summers, freezing cold winters, and in these different weather extremes, those boxcars can turn into ovens or refrigerators. And they're kept in these cars for, as you said, up to 70 or 100 hours at a time. They're usually forced to stand in their own waste because in these small cars, there's just nowhere else to go. And that, even when they're not being transported, when they're not performing, they're restrained. Often they're chained so tightly that they can't move. And because of this confinement, you'll see elephants in the circus, like many other animals in captivity, can develop what is called by many zoocosis, which is this disorder caused by an extreme lack of any kind of stimulation whatsoever. So whenever you see head bobbing or swaying or pacing or depression or self-mutilation, those can all be symptoms of zoocosis, which is this lack of stimulation. And besides that, I mean, ringling's elephants, they also suffer from disease and infection. There's numerous elephants suffering from elephant tuberculosis, which can easily be transferred to humans and not just through direct contact. And many of these elephants, they also suffer from leg and foot problems like arthritis and infection. And leg and foot problems to a human might seem, you know, that's too bad, I'll walk with a limp. But to an 8,000-pound animal, that's literally the difference between life and death, as it's one of the most common reasons that elephants are euthanized in captivity. So these lives are nothing like the ones that elephants mm-hmm. live in the wild. As I said, they're extremely social animals. They're mobile animals. And in the circus, they're deprived of everything that is natural and important to them.
Yes, I could definitely imagine that, and completely denied the opportunity to carry out their natural instincts, which is just, I just don't understand it. So please tell us about the ringling circus and the role that elephants play in this well-known entertainment business. How many elephants are with ringling right now?
Right now on the road, there are about 18 elephants suffering with ringling brothers right now, and those aren't counting the ones back in the breeding compound. I'm just going to give you a couple just mm-hmm. facts from a macro standpoint. So from 1993 to 2012, around 30 elephants have died in ringling's care. That includes several baby elephants who have died, and that doesn't even include other animals like lions or tigers or zebras. But it's also important to know that help is coming. And in 2011, as many might have heard, ringling was slapped with what is the largest fine that was ever paid by an animal exhibitor for violations of the United States Animal Welfare Act. And this was due in part to elephants with chronic and painful injuries, such as feet and leg injuries that we discussed before, being forced to perform, a baby elephant dying after an injury sustained during training, and the death of a lion due to heat stroke in a boxcar. And that's just some of the different cruelties that were cited. We have all these abuses and more documented on our website, ringlingbeatsanimals.com, and there you can see the abuse in action via our undercover video. It shows elephants chained so they can't move and beaten savagely backstage. And it's also, you know, it's important to know that these kind of abuses, they don't stop with Ringling Brothers. Mm-hmm. We have more undercover footage from other circuses and elephant exhibitors, they showing the exact same abuse. Because, like you said, they're necessary to make these animals do these tricks. They have no desire to stand on their head in the wild.
How big is the circus industry in the United States? It just seems far more expansive than what we have here in Canada. And I'm, in fact, not even really aware of any circuses that employ non-human animals in Canada. But it seems to be much of a larger thing. So what is the industry? I mean, obviously, there's money in it. So maybe you could just explain that a little bit, just to paint a picture of what we're dealing with here.
Sure. Well, Ringling Brothers is definitely the largest. They're the most well-known, and that's why we focus a lot of our mm-hmm. efforts on Ringling Brothers itself, because if we can change what they do, that's going to help trickle down to the rest of the circuses. But we're seeing a little bit more and more circuses that don't necessarily have elephants, but they will rent them from elephant exhibitors, and so there are several exhibitors, mm-hmm. Hawthorne Group, Have Trunk Will Travel, these kind of companies that lend out animals to different circuses just because that these circuses can't handle even the minute amounts of care that Ringling will give their animals. So it's led by Ringling, and there are several other smaller circuses that, you know, we're still keeping track of. And if people want to know where they can find like when the circus will be coming their way. They can head to PETA.org, and we actually have a calendar that shows where the different circuses are going to be at different dates, so you can be ready.
And Liam, can you tell us, would this kind of treatment and practices, would they also apply to elephants used in perhaps like the film industry and that you see in music videos and other forms of entertainment other than circuses?
Sure, yeah, they would. I mean, especially when you're talking about transporting elephants, a lot of the same stuff applies because in order to properly transport an elephant, it would be very expensive. And these exhibitors, they don't want to pay to take care of these elephants. So a lot of these same kind of exhibitors that I talked about earlier who lend out these elephants to different circuses, they'll do the same for film shoots and things like that. And that's why it's important that even if, say, the American Humane Association or something is on set in these things, they only have the jurisdiction to see what happens on set, and they're not seeing what happens during training, which is almost always negative enforcement, and happens during transport, and happens during housing. And there's no real control of what happens to these elephants after the cameras go off.
I'm curious to know what Ringling's response is to all animal activists and USDA people who are speaking up for the elephants, because you said help is coming. It made me hopeful, but it's still happening. But what is the progress that is occurring? Are elephants being relocated to sanctuaries? What's happening here?
Well, yeah, that actually brings up a quick fact, and because Ringling likes to spin their breeding facility in ways that make it sound positive, but it's important to know that Ringling has never released an elephant into the wild. They're not working toward helping any kind of natural population. Ringling, when slapped with this huge fine that was, you know, so historic and so great, they just simply denied the charges. They said that they don't believe that they were causing any harm to animals, but they're going to pay the fine because it's just a cost of doing business. To me, that sounds like someone who's scared to go to court and to have all their dirty laundry aired out. But it's the real momentum is coming from activists. It's coming from more and more people at circus protests outside these arenas every year. It's coming from less and less people in the stands at the circuses every year, less and less tour dates, and that's because people are seeing the truth. They're seeing it at sites like ringlingbeastanimals.com. These kinds of videos that show trainers savagely beating elephants backstage, they're all over the net, and people are seeing the truth that this is no way to teach our kids how to treat animals is by taking them to the circus.
So let's talk about the main goal of PETA's, your anti-ringling campaign, just to end off here. So you have the website ringlingbeatsanimals.com. I know there's a petition on there where you're calling for Ringling to retire the ailing elephants, which I would think would be practically all of them, to retire them to elephant sanctuaries. And I know it's about raising awareness. So what would you say is the main goal of the campaign, and what can people do as part of it to help the elephants?
Well, I mean, as you said, our petition online right now is to ask the Secretary of Agriculture to convince Ringling to send their ailing elephants to sanctuaries. But obviously, the end goal is to take all animals out of entertainment. That obviously includes elephants who are used for the circus. And people can do a lot of good in just a few easy ways. I mean, first, go to ringlingbeatsanimals.com, sign the petition, and let the Secretary of Agriculture know that you would want these elephants sent to sanctuary. The second is obvious as well. Don't go to the circus. Don't give them your money. And spread the word, to tell everyone that you can about what's really going on at the circus. It's not the smiles that you see in the commercials. And the next is probably one that people won't think about, but actually does a whole lot of good. And that's whenever you see a news fluff piece promoting the circus, or a ticket deal that is on, say, like a Groupon-type site or a travel site, any of those. If you see a promotion for the circus, call those businesses, email those businesses, and let them know that you won't be supporting them until they end their partnership with Ringling Brothers. Because people, we've seen news channels, we've seen different promotional sites drop these after enough people spoke up and said, hey, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, and it's important that you're not selling this to consumers.
So act with your dollar is the bottom line here. This is all money driven,
right.
and mm-hmm. we as consumers have the power to make this end. Thank you, Liam, for coming on the show today to speak about the elephants and circuses and PETA's anti-ringling campaign. To find out more about this campaign and to take action, please go to ringlingbeatsanimals.com. Thanks so much for your time with us today. Have a good day.
Thanks for having me.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Now, we've got some news for you today. First, some bad news. Vice.com reported about a man named Derek who's eaten nothing but raw animal flesh for 5 years. 5 years ago, Derek had some mysterious illness that killed his appetite and brought up everything he ate. So, reportedly, he tried a Mediterranean diet before ditching fish and eventually quote-unquote becoming vegan, but nothing worked, so he decided to try eating raw animal flesh instead. I thought this article was interesting because it also talked about his girlfriend who runs a vegan juice bar and is reported as being
That's
vegetarian, but then saying she's more of an omnivore with vegan tendencies. So she said that she's tried Derek's diet and that they had lamb tenderloins once and they were delicious, but she is vegetarian for compassionate reasons.
Yeah, I saw that article too, and I was like, when I read her quotes, I was just shocked. I'm like, if you're vegetarian for compassionate reasons,
or omnivore, vegan, it seems kind of.
Either way.
You said you're either a vegetarian or you're omnivore. Sorry.
No, and he said, like, he slaughters the animals. And there was, like, what this one image of the dead animal. I think it was a
in
sheep
fridge,
or something. It was,
yeah.
like, a sheep's head and then dead animal appendages hanging. It just looked like a horror film or something. It was weird.
I was pretty disturbed by it myself. But I thought it kind of brought up an interesting point about misreporting when it comes to veganism.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, if he tried becoming vegan, then he would not be slaughtering animals now. So I think perhaps he moved towards a plant-based diet
yes.
for a time.
Yeah.
But even that's such a broad thing, it's impossible to know like what he was eating and if it was actually nutritious for him. So I think I just wanted to point out to our listeners, if you notice any inaccuracies like this, please write to your editor and let them know that the term vegan should refer to people who believe in animal rights. And if there's any misreportings like that or referring to vegetarians as people who eat animals, that they should correct their errors in reporting. Our next story, actually related to our last guest, this is a story about PETA. In September, a family's companion animal, a cat, was shot with an air gun. The 1.5-year-old cat, Phoenix, had to have her front leg amputated after it was shattered by the air gun pellet. So PETA is so sickened by it that they're offering a reward to bring Phoenix's attackers to justice. Their spokesperson, Ben Williamson, said it is important that any community faced with the abuse of animals take measures to find the culprit or culprits and stop the violence. Animal abusers are a danger to everyone, and they take their issues out on whomever is available to them, humans or non-animals. So there's a $1,000 reward to find the culprit of this attack.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
And then we've got some good news now. Bob Clark of Kitchener is a man in his mid-60s. He's a chemical engineer who spent most of his life working at Procter & Gamble, the multinational corporation behind a lot of household products. He even helped to design the Swiffer cleaning system and traveled all over the world with them.
I just got a Swiffer.
Oh, yeah.
It was handed down to me by my sister.
Well, now you can thank Bob for that. And you can thank him for some other things, too, because he has had a change of heart when it comes to animals, and he's now acting as an animal rights activist and community organizer. He's doing his degree in music at Wilfrid Laurier University, even though he's in his 60s, and he's organizing the Animal Rights Day, which will be this Thursday, out in the Toronto area. So there's going to be a lot of events, including panel discussions about the treatment of animals at zoos and aquariums, the health benefits of a plant-based diet, and a talk by Joanne MacArthur, the photographer featured in the film The Ghosts in Our Machine.
Who we've had on the show before.
As well as many other places. She's around. So there's going to be documentary films and all this great stuff taking place at Wilfrid Laurier University and University of Waterloo. But it's really interesting because he had this change of heart later in his life. So Bob Clark was 30 when he stopped eating meat. He said he hated it when he was driving. He'd see a truck filled with animals bound for a slaughterhouse. And he didn't know anything about the animal rights movement back then, but just seeing the faces and snouts sticking out of the holes in the side of the truck upset him. And one day he said he can't do this anymore. far, and he and his wife stopped eating meat, as reported by therecord.com.
Now, I'm curious, like, is he still involved, like, working with Procter & Gamble?
No, he's, I think he's retired.
So I was going to say, they do a lot of animal testing and animal research on their products.
He's a music student now.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting.
I think he's pretty innovative person. It's never too late to change your life. That is, for me, the bottom line of the story. Thanks so much for the news, Jenny. For our feature interview today, we have Rob Branford with us, who is the head of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust chapter in the United Kingdom. This charity runs a sanctuary in Kenya for rescued elephants and is today the most successful orphan elephant rescue and rehabilitation program in the world and one of the pioneer and conservation organizations for wildlife and habitat protection in East Africa. The David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust is also the organizing body for the International March for Elephants, happening today on October 4th at locations all over the world. Rob is here today to speak with us about the rescue work of the sanctuary and about today's worldwide event.
Hello, Rob, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hello, it's very nice to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about the work that your organization does in rescuing baby elephants and raising awareness internationally for the elephants who are being exploited by mankind. I hadn't heard of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust until recently, and I wonder if you could start, please, by giving us a bit of a background on how this organization started and what its mission is for protecting the animals in Kenya, in particular, the elephants.
Essentially, the organization was founded back in 1977 by Dame Daphne Sheldrick. And Daphne actually chose to found it in honor of her late husband, David, who had been the founder warden of Kenya's largest national park, Tsavo. David himself is recognized as having sort of led the way in wildlife conservation, opening up this vast area, which is actually about the size of the country of Wales. And during his time there, putting in place protection measures, particularly anti-poaching measures for elephants, because poaching for ivory kind of started quite heavily in the 1970s. Now today, while we still have operations in Tsavo, we're headquartered out of Nairobi. And essentially, our mission is to embrace all measures that complement the conservation and preservation of wildlife. This includes kind of anti-poaching work, mobile veterinary teams, aerial surveillance work. We also do a lot of work with local communities because it's obviously important to get them to embrace their wildlife heritage and to want to protect the animals which they're sharing their land with. And of course, what we're probably most famous for is our Elephant Orphans Project. Well, I should say Elephant and Rhino Orphans Project.
Yeah, I'd actually love to hear about that more right now. You have a sanctuary that's located in Kenya. How long has it been in existence, and what is the primary goal of the sanctuary? And please do tell us about the Orphans Project, which I do understand exists to offer hope for the future of Kenya's threatened elephant and rhino populations as they struggle against the threat of poaching for their ivory and horn.
Of course. Well, essentially, we prefer not to call ourselves a sanctuary because for us that means that's where an animal is ultimately going to remain for the rest of its days. And the sort of primary purpose of the Orphans Project is to give a second chance to these elephants. So increasingly, we rescue orphaned elephants who are the victims of ivory poaching. So they have tragically witnessed the murder of their mother for her tusks. And that's off the result of a kind of surging demand at this time for ivory from many nations. There's sort of big markets in China, Thailand, the Philippines, the US has a big market. And I believe there's actually quite a decent sized market in Vancouver, in fact. And that's kind of where we get the majority of these orphans from. We've had the orphanage in Nairobi since 1977, which is when, as I say, when Daphne founded the charity. But even before that, back in the 50s, when she was living in Tsavo, she would have people bring all sorts of wild animals. So Daphne herself has kind of raised elephants and rhinos, antelopes, buffalo, zebra, giraffes. There's kind of a very long list. But it wasn't until about 1987 that she perfected the milk formula and husbandry necessary to successfully hand-raise a milk-dependent baby elephant. So that's an elephant under the age of 2 years. And while she was with the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, Daphne pioneered the sort of formula and husbandry that was needed. Because you can't, a lot of people kind of say, well, can't you just give them elephant milk? But the fat contents are completely wrong. And actually, if you give an elephant cow's milk, it will actually die within a matter of days. So she identified that human breast milk formula is actually the closest kind of milk formula to elephant milk. We obviously do quite a few things with that. We add sort of various supplements and oats and coconut and so forth to kind of get the balance. And that we've found successful. But you still, you know, the husbandry as well that comes with it is so critical. Elephants, just like us, are so reliant on the love of those around them to sort of survive and to have a willingness to live. Because lots of these orphans coming to us are just so traumatized. And we've had, in all our time, we've had three elephants that have simply given up the will to live. They've been in good condition. Everything seemed fine, but they just refused to take any milk, even kind of when you have the other elephants there to try and encourage them. And we've just had to watch them waste away, which is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah, I was very fascinated, actually, to be reading on your website about the process that it takes to rescue these baby orphaned elephants. They have so many needs, and nursing, as you said, was one of them. Can you talk about how the whole rescue process takes place from when they are rescued in the wild? Like, how does that happen to nursing them and raising them and then to releasing them back in the wild?
Now, of course, it's nowadays more and more people, thankfully, across Kenya, though we have rescued an elephant. We've got an elephant from Uganda, and we've also had an elephant from Botswana before. But essentially, we get a call from someone in Kenya, often from the Kenya Wildlife Service, to say that an orphaned elephant has been identified and needs to be rescued. So that's people on the ground recognizing that it's either been abandoned or it's being found next to a poached carcass. And that's the instant call for us to sort of get a rescue plane up there, organize the ground rescue, capture that elephant, which isn't always an easy task. Often we'll get told that there's a little elephant that needs rescuing, and our team will get there and find out it's kind of a three-year-old elephant. And believe me, a three-year-old elephant takes a lot of men to pull it down. And of course, you know, this elephant is terrified of you. It has no comprehension that you're there to try and help it. So a bit like you might do with a horse, you throw a blanket over its head to kind of take out all the visual elements that might panic it, and you get that elephant to the ground, you gently tie its legs, and it goes into the back of a small plane, which is kind of Kenya's a big place, so you can't do these rescues by road. We'll then fly that down to the Nairobi nursery, and this is where the sort of skill of our keepers, many of whom have been with us for kind of 20 years, comes in, where elephants, as I say, much like us, they need that love around them, and they've potentially just either lost their mother in a kind of human settlement, or they have actually witnessed her being killed. So these elephants often arrive highly traumatized. All they want to do when they see a person is kill that person. And it's the role of the keepers to be there to gently allow that elephant to realize that they're not there to harm it, to try and get it to take some milk. You know, often we'll need to be giving them IV drips because their sort of their health and their condition might be very poor, rehydrates and electrolyte. We're big fans of natural remedies where we can utilize them. So we use something called Rescue Remedy to help calm their nerves. And we use all sorts of natural remedies like green clay and things to help with wounds. And then importantly, we introduce the other orphans. So at the moment, there are 33 baby elephants under the age of 2.5 years at our nursery in Nairobi, which actually is the most we've ever had in the 35 years that we've existed. And bringing those other elephants out to meet a new arrival has the most impact in sort of telling that new elephant, actually, you're not alone. You know, the other elephants communicate with it. They touch. Elephants are huge on sort of touch and things. So you'll see them often sort of trunks touching the back and the head and around the other elephant's mouth. And that's just them communicating with each other and with the new arrivals to kind of say, look, you're not alone. And clearly they're communicating to them that these humans in their green coats, because our elephant keepers are kind of famous for these green jackets that they wear, they're here to help you. And those keepers will sleep with those elephants. They'll be with them 24 hours a day, exactly like you would expect the elephant's mother to be with it. But we rotate the keepers, which is a very important thing that we learn, because you can't allow an elephant to gain too much of an emotional attachment to any one person, because should that person for any reason have to go away, take leave, for the elephant, that will be like losing its mother again, because these keepers are surrogate mothers. They completely play that role. And as far as they're concerned, these elephants are their children, and they treat them with more love than you can possibly imagine. They treat them with the same love that I treat my own children. It's incredible.
Yeah, the role of the keepers with the elephants and just the role of family in the elephant world just seems to be so incredibly important, as it is to us human beings. I mean, we can relate to that. And I just wonder if you could speak about just more of the role of family in the elephant world and the bond between a baby elephant and his or her mother and extended family.
No, of course. Well, the most important thing in the world to a baby elephant, much like a human baby, is its mother and its extended family. It relies on that, and female elephants in particular are very vulnerable to sort of psychological despair if they lose their family. It's you know, Daphne Sheldrick has been working with elephants for 50 years now and is arguably the world authority on elephants and elephant behavior. And it's very apparent to her and all of us that are involved with this organization, the importance of family, no difference to us. You know, elephants match us age progressively. So a baby elephant is just like a human baby, though I should add they're much more intelligent than human babies. But, you know, when they're teenagers, they're boisterous, they're a bit naughty, they're a bit mischievous. You know, when they're adults, they start wanting to care and look after others. So the adult females will naturally want those matriarchal roles and to take care of the baby. So even at our orphanage, where you might have a 3-day-old elephant arrive, an elephant that's only 3 years old itself will take on a kind of mini matriarch role and be there and will kind of look after that elephant and will be close to it and will just make sure that it feels loved and it understands that between that mini elephant herd and those keepers, it's surrounded by the love it needs, because you just cannot explain how important that social side is. Elephants communicate in so many fascinating ways, and there's now evidence coming out, scientific evidence coming out, that they even communicate telepathically, which, you know, again, Daphne would say she's been witness to for years, because they do things that there's no explanation for, and there's no, you know, sounds or audible sounds to us. They can sort of sense movement through their feet. They use infrasound. They're just incredible animals.
Well, you know, animals have senses that we can't identify with, and it doesn't mean that they're not there, right? Like,
completely.
Just because we can't understand them. And you had spoken before about other needs of these very highly social creatures. For example, you said that they're very tactile, and the human family is encouraged to fondle the baby elephants gently and to talk to them and demonstrate genuine heartfelt affection to these baby animals. This is a need for the elephant, I can assume. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, it is like little things, like when it comes to feeding these elephants, the youngest elephants often won't take milk unless you essentially kind of on a washing line hang a blanket, and the elephant will use its trunk and will be touching that blanket exactly like it would touch the side of its mother if it was about to feed. And then our kind of keepers sneak around the other side and get the bottle into the elephant's mouth, because, you know, these elephants are drinking 4 liters of milk every 3 hours, 24 hours a day. And just by having that ability to sort of touch and feel, that's what allows them to relax and sort of know that they can, you know, take their milk, feel relaxed, everything's fine. A bit like a mother breastfeeding her baby, a human mother breastfeeding her baby. It's a very intimate, quiet process. You know, it's not something you do in a nightclub. It's because, you know, the noise and things distracts the baby, distracts it. It just needs to be relaxed. They just need that love. There's no other way of putting it. They need that love and that reassurance all the time.
And I read, too, that you can't fake the love, because elephants can read a person's heart and mind, so the affection must be sincere or else they will know.
Well, completely. And it's, for some people that sounds incredible, but we've had, you know, when we employ a new keeper, essentially the final decision on their employment is made by the elephants. You know, they could have the best credentials in the world and seem to us the nicest people in the world. But if the elephants don't take to them, if the elephants for some reason sense something that doesn't make them comfortable around that person, then that person can't be a keeper, because, of course, the elephants have to feel that love for them. There's a keeper who's been working with us for, I think, 22 years now, called Mishak. Well, he's often referred to as Mishak Magic, because there's something about him where the elephants absolutely adore him. So we've had elephants that are on death's door that will not respond in any way to any other keeper, to any person, even with the other elephants there, nothing's happening. And Mishak, somehow, just from the vibe, whatever it is he's giving off from his heart, essentially, tells that elephant, you're safe now. And we've watched elephants that really we had no hope for come round in his care and start taking their milk and then go on to live lives. It's incredible.
That's beautiful. Can you tell us about some personal stories of certain baby elephants who have been rescued, and how are they doing today after being reintegrated into the wild, which is, I believe, the end goal of the rescue center?
Well, yeah, no, completely. So I'll quickly say on that. So essentially, we bring them into this orphanage in Nairobi, where they'll stay until around 2.5 years of age. And at that point, the Nairobi nursery is in Nairobi National Park, which does not house elephants. It's next to the capital. So we moved them down to Tsavo National Park, where we've got two what we call reintegration centres. And the reason for that is Tsavo is the sort of best home for elephants in Kenya. It's the perfect climate, not a suitable place for humans to live. It's too arid, and there are wild elephants there, much smaller populations than there should be due to poaching, but there are around 11,000 elephants there. And it's from here that these sort of young elephants can start mixing with wild herds and integrating with wild herds, playing with wild elephants, learning the skills of being an elephant, essentially. And then they will ultimately decide, do you know what? It's much more fun being with these elephants than it is being with these humans. The nice thing is they will often then, and this is showing the kind of emotional bond that's been built, they will go and have wild-born babies and then bring those elephants back to show their keepers. And we've had that happen on 12 occasions, where elephants have come back and shown wild-born calves to the keepers. And incredible situations where we've had elephants with snare wounds, so ex-orphans, actually come back to us with snare wounds, poison arrow wounds to get treatment. They know that if they come to us, they'll get help. And we've even had elephants bring back wild elephants to get treatment from us, which is incredible that a wild elephant would be trusting enough to come towards humans, especially given what humans are doing to elephants.
Yeah.
So and then to go to sort of personal, two stories that always stand out for me. There's an elephant called Merca, and she arrived with with 12 inches of a spear embedded straight through her skull, and on her back, these horrific wounds that had been caused by a machete, because essentially the people that had found her were trying to kill her to eat her. She was clearly, thankfully, a very stubborn and tough elephant, and we were able to get to her. And just using, well, you know, with the milk formula and the love and all that support, and then also using something called green clay, which is just a natural substance that you can get from certain parts of the world, we were able to heal those wounds. And she's now, you know, she's now at Ithumba, which is one of our reintegration centers. She's mixing with wild elephants. She's kind of one of our, thankfully, many success stories. And then more recently, you've got an elephant called Kwanza, and this is a kind of horrible tale where she was in Amboseli National Park, and she'd been photographed by a very famous photographer called Nick Brandt with her elephant family. And 24 hours later, on returning to that location, Kwanza's mother and two older sisters had all been shot and killed. Not wanting to, you know, sound dramatic, but all three of those elephants had had their faces hacked off so that the tusks could be removed, because many people don't understand why those images of poached elephants are so bad. But it's because 25% of that tusk, of that ivory tooth, is in the elephant's head. And of course, it's valued at a kind of $1,000 a kilo in some markets around the world. So that's a highly prized asset, and people want every kind of gram of ivory that they can get. And Kwanza was there with this kind of horrific scene, and she now, thankfully, is with us. We were able, she clearly did want to kill every human she saw, but we were able to, over time, allow her to calm, to understand that we were there to help. She's still very nervous around people. She's only very comfortable around, you know, people that she knows and her keepers. But in time, she will move to Ithumba or Voi. She'll mix with those wild elephants, and she'll join the other 80 or so elephants that have gone through our entire process and are now living wild, which it will be an exciting day when that happens.
So the International March for Elephants is happening on October 4th. Please tell us about this worldwide event and what you hope to accomplish by spreading the awareness of elephant endangerment issues that comes with it.
We're very excited about it. It's the single largest public demonstration for a species that's ever taken place. There's marches in 15 cities around the world. In Canada, we've got one in Toronto. And it's an opportunity. What we want to do, or what we wanted to do, is to create a space where all of us as members of the public can speak up for elephants, can give a voice to elephants at this time where right now we're losing one elephant every 15 minutes. So that's 36,000 elephants are being killed every year. And at that rate, there could arguably be no elephants in the wild by 2025, which for me is staggering. And I refuse to live in a world where there are no elephants and where they're being killed purely for their ivory, which is seen as a sort of symbol of wealth and status, whereas in fact what it is, it's a symbol of death and suffering. And I think that's something that people need to understand. And the march is that opportunity for us to get the global media on board, to assert pressure on governments around the world to say, you cannot sit idly by and watch this happen, not least because there's increasing evidence that terrorist organizations such as Al-Shabaab receive a lot of their funding, well, 40% of their funding from the illicit ivory trade. And as I'm sure you and your listeners will know, Al-Shabaab have claimed responsibility for that horrific terrorist attack that took place in Nairobi a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, this is a group that is partly funded through the illicit ivory trade. And it's shocking to think that, you know, those innocent people, those 67 innocent people have lost their lives. And, you know, these are the messages that we're trying to get out. It's not just about how intelligent these animals are, because they are highly intelligent, and that's kind of proven in science. And it's not about the fact that, you know, it's not only about the fact that they shape environments and other species are reliant on them and trees are reliant on them for germinating seeds. It's also about the fact that, you know, we've got to tackle this trade because it's linked with criminal syndicates, it's linked with terrorist groups, and that's costing human lives as well. So it's not just elephants losing their lives, it's people as well. And that's kind of our message. And we're hoping to have sort of thousands or tens of thousands of people take to the streets. And then we've also got a digital march. So all of your listeners can join the digital march, which is just by going to the website iworry.org. And on there, they could join the digital march and help kind of add to those numbers and that message.
Well, thank you, Rob, for coming on the show today to speak with us about the work that's being done in rescuing baby elephants at this elephant sanctuary in Africa and about the International March for Elephants, which is happening all over the globe on October 4th. As you said, to find out more about this campaign and event, please visit iworry.org. And I also want to encourage our listeners to go to sheldrickwildlifetrust.org, where you can see all the baby elephants there and their rescue stories and wonderful photographs. Thank you so much and have a good day.
Thank you, Alison, and thank you to your listeners.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on next week's show where our producer Alyssa will be doing a Thanksgiving show about the colonial history of Thanksgiving and also prepping for the Thanksgiving potluck happening on Monday, October 14th. The show will air on Friday, October 11th at noon. We here at the Animal Voices Radio Show ask that you keep connected with us. If you want more information about the potluck or next week's show or to view a podcast of today's show, check us out on the internet by going to our website, animalvoices.org. You can also check us out on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver or on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. If you appreciate the work we do, we recommend that you support us with a donation to Co-op Radio because we do rely on your support. You can check that out at cooperadio.org and click donate to radio and indicate that your donation is going towards Animal Voices. Now we're going to close the show with a song by Henry Mancini.
Very famous composer.
He's song Baby Elephant Walk is going to play. It's dedicated to all of the baby elephants who've been rescued in Kenya, wishing them the best in their new lives. Now stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith, and thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. Remember to be kind to the animals. Thank you.